The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt from Studio North, back after a three-day break in Boston. I want to thank Kurt Schlichter, Generalissimo Ed Morrissey, for sitting in for me so I could go attend my reunion. And I've got to say, at the beginning, it was an average reunion. Average. 100% awful, 100% great. The great part is what you expect. You see some friends you haven't seen, and I haven't been to a reunion in 15 years. I don't do many of these. And I got to catch up with some people. And one of my good friends, who I see every 10 years or so, Karen Baum Gordon, has written a book called The Last Letter, which I didn't know about, and I ended up listening to most of the 4 days I was in Boston, and I've almost finished it. I got less than an hour to go. It's really remarkable. So that was a boon. Old friends, and that means Cam and Paul. And I do see some folks fairly regularly, like Dan and Ponham and Mark Guerin, who were, they're Democrats who live in D.C., and they're my good buds, and Mark is no longer in D.C. But I just see them enough that it's not, I wouldn't go to a reunion to see people that I see anyway. But a lot of folks I hadn't seen in a long time. Great, great, great front. And Julie and Karen, and I mean, just a lot of great fun. The downside, apparently there are no conservatives in the class at all who can be on a panel. So the panels on climate change and on China and on, the Wither Democracy, not bad. I mean, Mark Aaron's one of probably my closest friend in the world. And then John Cooper, another good friend, mayor of Nashville. Great to have them on there. I don't know who the other two people were, but they weren't in our class. There are apparently no conservatives in the class who can speak on any topic. Now, I wasn't asked, and that's fine. I'm not upset by that. I just think it's pretty crazy, and it's the blue bubble. Now, the worst part of the weekend, the week, I got to tell you right now, I'm just going to be honest, because there might be a picture out there, and I don't want people to be confused. I want to get the bad news out first. It was blazing hot on Thursday and Friday. Blazing hot in Boston. I think 90 degrees on Friday. And a lot of these stand around and chat with people stuff are held outdoors. So I had to buy a cap because, of course, I forgot to bring my Guardians cap or my Cleveland Browns cap or anything else I normally wear, my Block C. So I go in, and there are only three hats to buy in every store in Harvard Square. Only three. You can get a Harvard hat, which I never wear and refuse to.
You did not have a Red Sox hat.
Just let me finish the story. The second choice is the New England Patriots. And, of course, Bill Belichick drove the Browns into the ground, and they got moved to Baltimore for 3 years exile, like Romans used to get exiled. And so I'm never going to wear a New England Patriots hat. So I am left with one hat looking at me, and Generalissimo anticipated correctly, I had to buy a Red Sox hat.
Ah! Ah! I don't know you. I've never known you.
No, I am sorry. I just want, before the pictures come out, I want everyone to know there might be pictures of you in a red. Because, look, I got a bald spot as big as yours, sort of, maybe. Not really. We have you on the camera, so it's not really as big as that. And but it's back there, and I don't want to have that exposed. I gave it to Brian the banker last night. Brian the banker's a red. I said, this has been worn for 2 days, and it's getting out of my house right now. Brian the banker is the guy who's not the Silicon Valley Bank, although I think he has a ski chalet to which I've not been invited. So he took it away. He got it out of the house, and, you know, it's gone. But I'm sorry. I just confess.
I'm stunned that you compounded the error.
Well, no, it should be with him.
You gave it away to be worn again.
No, but don't you know that's like the radioactive material in a hospital? If you ever walk in a hospital, there's one room that you never want to go near.
Yeah.
And they've got all the signs on it, nuclear they store the low-level radioactive waste from the x-rays and the various radiology tests that they do.
Correct.
And so all of the Red Sox stuff should be in one place, as far as I'm concerned.
No, the correct thing should have been to burn it on video to prove that it is no longer in existence.
No, I can get Brian the banker to testify to this. I can. He was very jolly about it. And I got to tell you right now, maybe that's why I was so sour on the fact that there are, do you know that they did a class survey? Now the class has 1600 people in it, of which about 500 self-select. I don't fill out surveys ever. I'm a grumpy survey. Pollsters never get my opinion. I tell you my opinion, but there was a survey of 500 people. Of those 500, 90% voted for Joe Biden and 10% voted for Donald Trump. I think that overstates the number of conservatives. You know, I just do. It was the craziest vacuum of common sense. And they just, it was so PC. Look, the China panel.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
I already wrote Chairman Gallagher about this. Mike Gallagher, chairman of the Select Committee on Engagement with the Chinese Communist Party, I already sent him a note saying, you will not believe this panel. Now, I'm not going to tell you who's on it, but it's three Harvard academics. And apparently our tensions with China are our fault. Moreover, from the back of the room, from a very smart oncologist, we caused the war with Japan in 1941. And after a bunch of this nonsense, and from the middle of the room comes I think America paid for the Taiwanese demonstrators to go to Hong Kong and provoke the riots. I mean, we really have an otherworldly group of people about China running this thing. And it's all our fault. We're going to force China into going to war with us, just like we did to Japan in 1931. A hand goes up, and a guy I don't know this guy. He says, look, it's Chatham House rules, because the participants don't want to be filmed. And I thought that was a good idea. I was nodding my head, don't film this, because then we won't hear anything for real. But of course, if you're one of those people that wave off cameras and film, you're not going to see anything anyway. They're afraid that China will hear it, right? And they'll lose their cachet with China and with General Secretary Xi. The only thing that was said that I agreed with is the China experts of the left, start calling him General Secretary Xi. The American press calls him President Xi, and China likes that because it gives the illusion to some people he's been elected. He's General Secretary Xi. But finally, a hand goes up in the middle, and the guy says, well, I just got to say a couple of things. I really didn't intend to talk. I spent more than 40 years in the CIA. I'm retired. We got a CIA. This is not unusual. There are a lot of spooks come out of the Ivy Leagues. One me. I'm not one. Never have. Not there. Been only been there once. Talked to Mike Pompeo. Not me, but a spook. Puts up their hand, says 40 years plus, and we didn't start the war with Japan. Japan invaded Manchuria in 1933 and was aggressively destroying Chinese lives, and the world embargoed them. And number two, the CIA does not pay Taiwanese students to go to Hong Kong to get killed. We don't do that. We run ops all over the world, but that's a peer, and we don't do things like that. And then he stopped, and then I left, because it was the silliest doggone thing. It was so left-wing. It's going to take me a couple of weeks to shake it off. Now, I do want to tell you that I got a lot of news, and I'll go through the news. I do want to tell you that there is the story I will be covering in the Grand Old Pod today, if you're a subscriber to the universe. An amazing number. Every conservative who was there found me. And not a few Trump derangement syndrome people. All right, the Trump derangement syndrome people just wanted to yell at me at a reunion. And I don't do politics at reunions. I don't. I do politics 5 days a week. You know, I'll be on newsroom today with Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer. And I'll be on with Brett Baer later this week. And I do 3-5 shows a week with you. And so I do politics. I love politics, love news, love which way is the country going, but not at a reunion. I want to know, how are your kids? Where are your grandkids? What's going on in your life? Can you take Genghis Kate for a couple of weeks? No one would agree to do that. They've heard the show. But every conservative in the class, 5 or 6 of them out of the 500, found me and chatted about how completely insane this was. And some Democrats found me and said, this is really off the rails. And I said, yep, not me, not my fault. I had nothing to do with it. And they did not ask me, and I did not turn them down. So it's not my fault. And I did not offer either. You know, you don't take responsibility. I'm not one of those class cheer people. Okay, I'm done. Now let me go to the news. The story I will not be talking about today, but will be talking about on the Grand Old Pod, and I was surprised to find a number of people listening to the Grand Old Pod, is the New York Times story yesterday, Inside the Complicated Reality of Being America's Oldest President. This is a Peter Baker and Mike Scheer are two of the reporters. Zolan Cano Youngs and Katie Rogers are the other two. So I'm not going to blame Peter and Michael for what is a whitewash of the fact that the biggest story of the weekend is the president falling down at the Air Force Academy and bumping his head on Marine One when he's getting it off and kind of being lost at the Marine Corps parade on Friday night. The guy is too old to run for president. He's just too old. And everybody that is my age, 67, knows it. Because we are still able to do our jobs. But I'm telling you, he's not going to be their nominee. He's not going to be their nominee. Not going to happen. Gavin Newsom is warming up in the bullpen. And like Sticks, McKenzie came back for the Guardians last night. He might have. Sticks only went 5 innings but gave up 1 hit. The Guardians are back. Things are good. And I am back too. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, General Lee Smith. Coming right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt back in the chair. Thanks again to Kurt Schlichter, Generalissimo, and Ed Morrissey, who sat in for me Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday when I was at my reunion. They did a great job telling you and reminding you about Angel Tree camps. This is the last week I'll be doing that because they have to actually start running the camps. I'm glad they're not running the camps right now, either in Arizona or up north. I was talking to a friend of mine from my law school class about my next reunion. Because I took 2 years off between college and law school, my reunion years for both college and law school are always the same, so I don't go to either of them usually. But this year I went to college. Maybe I'll go to law school one. I don't know. But I was talking to a law school classmate in Phoenix yesterday. It was 99 degrees. And in Maine, it was 49 degrees. So I don't think they're camping in Arizona or Maine much. But Angel Tree camps do get underway. And you're very, very generous. This audience always is. But we can always use more because we can always send more kids. And when the kids go to an Angel Tree camp, they escape for a moment the idea of other kids saying your dad's in jail, your mom's in jail. Kids are cruel often, not always, but often. And they get that, but they get away from that stigma for at least a week. Listen to Kristen talking about that.
And just have people believe in them and for them to be able to be a kid and not suffer for the crime that their parents are in prison for. We actually feel like they're the silent victims of crime because they're labeled through Angel Tree. That's what we're doing is we're giving them the opportunity to be a kid and to look past their parents' label.
I love that, but mostly just the opportunity to get in relationship with camp counselors, with Angel Tree. The banner for Angel Tree camping is at the top of HughHewitt.com. $200 sends one kid to camp. You'll change their life. And they'll remember it forever. And you're storing up your rewards in heaven. I'm telling you, I got to look for the number. 888-206-2764. If you want to use the old-fashioned thing, just call 888-206-2764. And be as generous as you can. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. That's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and I'm joined by Selena Zito, who's somewhere in Indiana on her way to Iowa. Good morning, Selena Zito.
Good morning, sunshine. How are you?
I'm great. I just got back from my reunion. I'm happy to escape the most left-leaning group of people. I mean, some of them are my dear friends, but boy, oh boy, what a blue bubble. Hey, Selena, has Ron DeSantis hit the right level of calibrated combativeness with that response?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the kind of thing that voters wanted to see. They wanted to see, you know, people understand you're prepared when you give a speech. However, you've got to also be prepared when things like that happen and you have to land on your feet. It doesn't matter the exact words you use in response to a heckler, but are you nimble enough to handle it when it happens?
And, so you're in Indiana, right?
Yeah, somewhere.
So you can take a level out and it'll be level. Indiana is level. People don't know that. Indiana is the levelest state in the United States. Can you see for miles and miles, or is it a cloudy, windy morning there?
No. It's a sunshiny morning.
Sunshine. And so that you can probably see Illinois, Iowa. What's on the other side of Indiana? Illinois? Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got to go through Illinois to get to Iowa. Can you see Iowa from where you are?
Maybe.
Well, I'm telling you, it's all very flat. You left the nice rolling hills of Ohio where the country's heartbeat is. What are you going to Iowa for, Selena?
Well, I thought it was important to go out and see what voters thought, what regular people thought after the crowds have left, right? This was the past week has been the Joni Ernst has her annual shindig, but DeSantis was also out there for a couple of other things, but also everybody else was out there as well. So I wanted to get a feel for how after they left and the dust has settled, how do people feel? What did they think? What did they like? What they heard? Iowa is always an interesting and fun state because voters expect you to show up in their backyard. And because of that, they're almost one of the most well-informed group of people because they do their homework. They want
to. Are you going to go north and talk to the people who grow corn in the north? Are you going to go south and talk to the people who grow corn in the south?
I'm going to go everywhere.
Iowa, that's a long haul between bright lights.
Oh, I know. I've done it. I don't know. This is my unseen time to have done this. This is the time I like to go.
Would you go over to Drake University? Because I now have a theory that higher ed has just been completely captured by the left, except at places like Hillsdale, and that there are little blue bubbles, as my friend Garen says, blueberries in a bowl of tomato soup. And there are a couple of those in Iowa, right? There's still some Iowa Democrats. I would love to know what they think about this, because they're stuck with this president. Have you read the New York Times piece yet on Joe Biden's age?
No, I have not read it, but I'm definitely going to talk to Democrats in Iowa.
Oh, my goodness. What did you make of the president taking a pratfall at the Air Force Academy, hitting his head on Marine One, going to the Friday night parade at the Marine Corps Barracks and being lost? What do you think?
I think it just underscores what people already understood and knew. People who already have a family member or a parent who has hit that age bracket where things aren't as sharp as they used to be. And they understand those struggles. And it's people are very uncomfortable. I'm very uncomfortable watching it. It's very sad. It's very sad that people have put him in this place and said it was okay. So same way I feel about Dianne Feinstein and John Fetterman. It's uncomfortable.
Do you think he's going to be the nominee, Selena?
No, neither do I. I wrote a story about that about a month ago. I don't think either Trump or Biden are inevitable.
Well, I think Joe Biden's going to do an LBJ and that Gavin Newsom's going to come in from left field with enough money and a pretend record. They're going to ignore everything in California. Would you ask some Democrats if they've even heard of Gavin Newsom when you get out there?
Oh, yeah, I definitely plan on it.
Are you staying there all summer?
No. I will be back several times. So.
Okay, I just want to know what's going on in Yinzerland. You can't leave us hanging on Yinzer Report.
I won't.
Selena Zito, thank you. Follow her on Twitter at Zito Selena. Everything Selena Zito is also available if you sign up for a newsletter at selenazito.com. The Twitter is backwards, Zito Selena, but the website is Selena Zito, if you got that all. I'm Q Hewitt. I'll be right back. Stay tuned, America. It's Monday, and I'm back. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. My guest, Steve Cortez, is now with the Great American Pack. I think I've got that right, Steve. I haven't seen you in a long time. How are you, friend?
Hey, I'm great, Hugh. Thank you for having me. Never Back Down is the name.
Never Back Down. All right. Now, let's go back to Washington University 2015, 2016. You and I are doing stand-ups for MSNBC. There are two kind of Republicans on MSNBC. Refugees, and that's our good friend Michael Steele, and missionaries. That was me and you. And in the days of Andy Lack, when he cared about NBC having balance, he recruited Steve and me to come on and talk about why we supported Donald Trump. Now, I'm back in Switzerland because I have everybody on the show, but you've gone over to Team DeSantis from Team Trump. Tell us why.
I have. And by the way, back in those days, I was a fervent advocate for Donald Trump, and I was honored to be so. You know, I really believed, and I still believe now, that in 2016, Donald Trump was exactly the disruptor that this country needed. He opened a lot of eyes, including my own, and pulled off one of the best, biggest political upsets in American history. However, I believe that today, if we take an honest assessment of the situation, who is the best possible candidate to both win the general election and then govern effectively as a conservative, I believe that is Governor Ron DeSantis. And I came to that conclusion largely because if we look at this string of successive election cycle losses since 2016, if we look at 2018, 2020, and 22, at least relative to expectations, we have been losing. And so I think if we're honest people, if we're an honest movement, we have to consider why we're losing. I don't believe it's because our agenda is wrong of patriotic populist conservatism. America's a center-right country, even though it's not being governed that way. It's not being governed that way because we keep losing what are winnable elections. And I believe the reason, and I think the data and polling largely show this, is because of poor tactics and because of the wrong leadership. So I think with the right approach, with the right tactics, and with a new generation of conservative leadership in Ron DeSantis, I believe we start winning these elections. What I also did, Hugh, is I looked at the national scene and what was the outlier? You know, where have we been winning? What has been the exception? It's the state of Florida broadly, and it's Ron DeSantis specifically. So I came around after this last November of 2022, when I saw his just resounding landslide runaway victory, his incredibly effective conservative governance of what used to be a swing state and doesn't seem to be anymore, largely thanks to his leadership. And I determined that this is the man, this is the young leader, the next generation to lead the America First movement forward, and he can win both the nomination as well as the presidency.
Now, Steve, I have a rule on the show. You're the exception to the rule. I don't allow surrogates to speak for candidates. You're the exception. You're a surrogate because I think Make America Great is being run by Jeff Rowe. Am I correct about that? Is he the senior strategist for Make America for
Never Back Down? Down Back? Yes.
And how do you work? I mean, how does it actually operate?
Sure. Well, and by the way, to most folks out there between the campaign and the Political Action Committee, the Super PAC, there's not necessarily, you know, it's sometimes a distinction without a difference. But the reality is outside groups, and of course, everybody even running for minor offices these days has an outside Super PAC. An outside Super PAC is allowed to raise unlimited funds, disclosable, but unlimited funds, but it cannot coordinate directly with the candidate, even though we are advocating every day on behalf of the candidate. So in this case, for example, Never Back Down was organized before Ron DeSantis was officially a candidate and working very hard in the field in places like Iowa, knocking on doors, contacting voters, and holding events. So we do some of the same things that the candidate does, and then we do some, the campaign does, and then in some cases, some very different tasks. In this specific race so far, and I expect this to continue, Never Back Down is really focused on ground game, on things that I mentioned, like door knocking, like actual voter contact, particularly in these first four states of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. The campaign side will handle more of the sort of air war, things like advertising.
You're a fabulous surrogate because I worked next to you when you were working for MSNBC and I saw that you're a fabulous surrogate. I just want to know how the marriage came together between Don't Back Down Pack, Jeff Rowe, and Steve Cortez. What happened?
Sure. Well, and thank you for the compliment. I appreciate it. And you know, I hope to be as effective for Ron DeSantis as I was for Donald Trump. Look, I came around, as I said, after the November elections. And so there had been some outreach from some folks in DeSantis world to me. They knew that I was at least wavering in terms of who I was going to support in this upcoming 2024 election. So they arranged a meeting with the governor. I went down and saw him at the governor's mansion in Tallahassee. We had a very in-depth, very substantive conversation because I did not arrive at this decision easily or flippantly, Hugh. You know, I've spent most of the last 7 years of my professional life advocating for Donald Trump. So to switch teams, to somebody who's competing against Donald Trump to earn the nomination was a very big deal for me personally. And I knew it would matter to a lot of folks out there who follow my work and respect me. So, but after that conversation, I was even more convinced that he is the right person. He is the principled conservative who has proven that you can win voters who weren't previously voting or weren't voting Republican. He did it overwhelmingly in the state of Florida. You know, he barely won in 2018. Largely because he got crushed in Miami-Dade County, the biggest county in Florida. Like most Republicans, he did really poorly in a diverse urban area. Well, fast forward to 2022, only 4 years later, he went from losing Miami-Dade by 21% to winning it by 10. That kind of a move of 31% in only 4 years is astounding, frankly.
And then I want to play for you a couple of clips, Steve, because I get it. But you know me, we're not going to go through all the standard stuff. I want to get your reaction. Nikki Haley came out swinging against Governor DeSantis last night at the Jake Tapper CNN town hall. Here's what she said about the DeSantis-Disney imbroglio, cut number 9.
So here you have DeSantis, who accepted $50,000 in political contributions from Disney. He went and put their executives and their lobbyists on prominent boards throughout Florida. And he went and basically gave the highest corporate subsidies in Florida history to Disney. But because they went and criticized him, now he's going to spend taxpayer dollars on a lawsuit. It's just like all this vendetta stuff. We've been down that road again. We can't go down that. Businesses were my partners in South Carolina. We didn't always get along. And luckily, South Carolina is very anti-woke. But when you have a company like that, don't bring the citizens' taxpayer dollars into it. Pick up the phone, deal with it, settle it the way you should. And I just think he's being hypocritical.
So, Steve Cortez, what do you make about that? That's a javelin thrown at your candidate.
It sure is. By the way, it's fascinating if you notice that all of the other candidates or potential candidates in the race, they're not attacking the front runner, Donald Trump. They're attacking Ron DeSantis, which I think is very telling because I think they recognize where the real power is in this race. But in any case, Nikki Haley there, I actually was speaking to some of the folks at our PAC and Never Back Down and said, we should actually clip some of what she said and use it as our campaign commercial. And what I mean by that is she believes that she's criticizing Ron DeSantis by saying, wait a second, some of these big shots at Disney gave contributions to you, Ron DeSantis, which of course is not unusual. That happens in any state. Powerful corporations will donate to the sitting governor of either party. But what did Ron DeSantis do? He then opposed exactly what those very executives wanted. So he proved that he is not a puppet of big donors, even when he has earned their support. So to me, it's nonsensical. I think she made the opposite point of what she intended to make. She said Disney was a significant donor to Ron DeSantis, and Ron DeSantis then thwarted Disney to stand up to protect the innocence of Florida children who he does not want sexualized at a very young age by extremely woke liberal curriculum in Florida schools. So to me, she made exactly the opposite point of what I believe she thinks she made.
So, Steve, all the javelins are being thrown at your guy, right? There's some gentle nudges towards the former president. Everyone's kind of afraid of hitting the MAGA people the wrong way. What do you say to the MAGA people about the need to move on from Donald Trump or to stay with Donald Trump?
Sure. And by the way, yeah, I think we see the same thing, not just from the candidates, but also from the media, because even conservative media is too scared of Donald Trump to cross him. And so we have all the liberal media coming after Ron DeSantis because he's been so effective and largely taking them on, especially Disney. We also have most of the legacy conservative media coming after Ron DeSantis. So we have a strange phenomenon.
Say what? Say what?
Yeah, not you. But
all right, just saying.
But my message to the MAGA adherents out there who I know and love, my message to them is, listen, we can have tremendous regard for the accomplishments of Donald Trump and for the great things he did. And there are really significant advancements from Donald Trump. But we can also come to the realization that our first loyalty must be to the country and to the movement, not to any one individual. And just because he was the right man in 2016 does not mean that he is the right leader today. And I think if people take a non-emotional look at this race and if they assess who Ron DeSantis is, and once they learn who he is, and a lot of folks outside of Florida don't yet know his story. They're starting to learn it, especially in Iowa where he's been campaigning so aggressively. Once they learn that story, I think they're going to be convinced that this is the next natural evolution, that this is the leader who will take our movement to a higher level. What Donald Trump did was absolutely instrumental, but it is now time to move on, and particularly with somebody who can enact the policies while in office, not just be
the disruptor. Quick exit question, Steve. I want to know about the 40,000 donors. Karl Rove handicapped, and he said that you're going to get the Florida governor, the former president, Ambassador Haley, and Senator Scott will get the 40,000. He thinks that Mike Pence and Chris Christie will. Not sure about Vivek and nobody else. How do you agree with this handicapping? Seven people on the stage?
You know, yes, I think he's roughly right. But, you know, we'll see. We're only worried about our team. Of course, we've qualified. We're in. Very much looking forward to a vigorous debate.
Do you expect Governor DeSantis to do all the debates, even if legacy media are involved?
Oh, absolutely. I do. I mean, now, of course, he's been very clear that he prefers that those liberal allies not be involved. And I think it would be a mistake for the RNC to do so. But however the debates are structured.
Yeah, I'm curious, Governor DeSantis, very quick. Why would it be a mistake? I think that's wrong. I think I want the platform. I don't care who provides it. I want the platform.
Well, because I think that those news organizations have proven, or pseudo news organizations have proven themselves to be so dishonest, particularly when it comes to Governor DeSantis, Donald Trump to an extent, but much more with the governor, have been so dishonest that I don't think that they deserve the gift that is these debates, because they're going to generate such massive attention. But, you know, regardless, look, that is not part of my purview organizing that. Whatever the RNC decides, I firmly am confident that not only will Ron DeSantis be there, but he will shine. He will show the American people who he is and what he's done.
Steve, it is great to see you again. Follow him on Twitter at Cortez Steve, C-O-R-T-E-S Steve. That's like Zito Salina. You guys that go backwards. Cortez Steve from Never Back Down Pack. Thank you, Steve. It's good to see you again. I'll have you back, I'm sure. You're the only guy who gets a pass on the surrogate rule, only because we work together as missionaries to MSNBC for many years. There are two kinds of Republicans on MSNBC, missionaries and refugees. Steve and I are no longer there because we were missionaries and it didn't work. They decided to go left, like all of NBC. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, joined by Josh Krasauer. You should be following him on Twitter, Jewish Insider, Axios, and Man About Town. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Happy Monday.
And to you, I've got here a very long story from the New York Times yesterday, Inside the Complicated Reality of Being America's Oldest President. They wrote this, obviously, before the president fell over at the Air Force Academy or hit his head on Marine One or got wandering around at the Marine Corps barracks display. I don't think you can stop. This is going to be the issue of the campaign, Josh. Do you agree?
I do, and it's an issue that Democratic voters talk about. Respond to pollsters about it. Over half of Democrats are worried about President Biden's age and health. And it's going to be the elephant in the room throughout the whole nomination process. If there is a fight, I don't think there will be, but if there is anything that gives Biden a scare in the primary process, and certainly it's going to be an issue in the general election.
Yeah, let's roll the tape, if we can, of the president falling down at the Air Force Academy, Jacob. I'll tell you, Josh, when I see things like this, my heart goes out to an old person. I mean, if you break a hip, you're in the hospital for 6 weeks minimum sort of thing. What did you think when you saw him go down? Jimmy Carter with the rabbit moment, or Jimmy Carter dropping out of the race moment, or worse?
No, well, it's different. It's different because Joe Biden is 80 years old, right? And that any even small trip, fall, is going to have massive ramifications if you don't know what the status is. And look, whenever you see a lot of official Democratic spin about how healthy and how vigorous the president is and almost going over the top and trying to portray someone who's just, you know, as physically active as he's ever been. We saw that a lot in the aftermath of that fall over the sandbag in Colorado. It almost betrays the fact that they're worried about something. They're worried about what they know behind the scenes in the White House.
I believe that is the case. And I don't think he's going to be their nominee. I'm just out there. I think he's doing an LBJ, but they don't want Kamala Harris to be the nominee either. They're going to wait for Gavin. The longer they keep her from running, the more likely it is that Gavin can beat her. That's my from the other party assessment. What's your assessment?
Well, look, it's sort of a weird situation because I think a lot of the spin is sort of made Biden into the Democratic spin has made Biden into this like larger than life figure, this abnormally active president to counter some of the criticism. I mean, the reality, as you know, Hugh, in any administration, it's a team effort. He's not the president waving a magic wand, but it's a lot of cabinet officials, administration advisors. I mean, that's what the Biden administration has been. It's been a very collaborative effort, starting with the president, but there's been a lot of activity on the staff side. And look, I think that is why I do think it's full steam ahead for Biden's reelection, both because, look, they've had a bunch of governing successes, most recently with the debt ceiling compromise with Kevin McCarthy. And you mentioned it to you yourself. There's no other option that looks any better with Kamala Harris as the possible alternative, with the possibility of a civil war over ideology in the Democratic Party if Biden steps aside. I mean, that is no more palatable to Democrats than, you know, what they know in terms of having an aging 80-year-old running for reelection.
Now, let me switch to the other side. In the New York Times story, the obvious off-ramp for most reporters is, well, Donald Trump's 76. Donald Trump is a very young 76, and Joe Biden is a very old 80. But nobody else is even close, Josh. Does that work to diffuse the issue, to talk about the fact that Donald Trump is 76? Because he sure didn't act it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I will say my own perspective, Trump certainly looks more active as a 78-year-old than Biden does. But don't take my own analysis of it. Just look at the polls. There have been numerous polls that have asked the question of the percentage of voters who think, you know, Biden is physically up to the task and Trump is physically up to the task in various ways. And Trump scores significantly higher on that test in terms of the perception of voters than Biden does. So it's not just, you know, what people see or what they think. There definitely is a perception among a critical mass of voters that Trump is capable, is a little bit more physically active or more engaged. And Biden, Biden does look a little bit frail, especially lately.
Oh, he looks infirm. It's the word I use because I don't want to suggest Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or none of that nonsense conspiracy stuff. He's just infirm. He's 80 years old. How old are your parents, Josh? Are they with us still?
Yeah, they're not 80 yet. My dad's in his mid-70s. But yeah, like you, anyone who has parents that age, like or my grandparents, you know, you lose a little. You know, it's natural to just lose a little bit of speed off your fastball. And that's what everyone goes through. So the question is, like, how do voters think about that? Is that enough of, I mean, they're clearly concerned. It's not just partisanship. It's Democrats, too, that have concerns about Biden's health and age. The question is, do they end up voting for someone else or do they not vote for Biden because of those concerns?
I have an encapsulating question, Josh. If you go anywhere on a car trip with six people, you're going to get a van or an SUV, and only one of them is 80 plus, who do you hand the car keys to?
Probably not the person who is in their 80s.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that we almost had a major confrontation with China over the weekend and the president's recovering from falling on down at the airport. It's crazy to me that they're even pretending this. Josh, it is always great to see you. Keep following him on Twitter, Josh Kroshauer, Jewish Insider, and at Axios. Maybe the best, most balanced, serious. I have no idea how Josh votes. None. Nobody. I'm a Republican. I don't know if Josh is a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. I have no idea. That's why he makes such a great, great political reporter. Coming back, hour number three. Chairman McHenry joining me along with David Bonson. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Hillsdale understands the importance of education to the future of our country, and they want you to as well. So they are offering you 10 free print copies of the recent issue of Imprimis, entitled Education is a Battleground, written by Hillsdale College President Larry Arndt. The special issue of Imprimis provides a factual account of the issues in the ongoing battle over education. It explains why parents and teachers, not bureaucrats and activists, should guide what our children are learning. Don't miss the opportunity to arm yourself with the facts. Claim your free copies, 10 of them. Education is a Battleground, the Imprimis issue you cannot miss, by visiting HughForHillsdale.com. That's HughForHillsdale.com. Act now and join the battle over education for our country's future. North back after being off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, go to my reunion. I was deep in the blue bubble. I mean, deep in the blue bubble at Harvard last week. And I'm glad to be out of it with David Bonson to help me get my bearings back. David, when you go to your college reunions, are you surrounded by Trump derangement syndrome victims? Hello, David. Good morning. Oh, you know what happens when you have a Californian this early in the morning? Is that they're wandering around in their robe, and they wander too far into the kitchen and the connection drops. I got to tell you, though, David Bonson is with the Bonson Group. He's one of the smartest guys I know on all matters financial, so I like to touch base with him every now and then. And hopefully we've got him back up here shortly. Were we trying to do the video link? Is that it? Yeah, the video link sometimes drops when people don't have the appropriate amount of bandwidth. Hey, David, I was just asking you, when you go to your reunions, do you find yourself in a blue bubble?
When I go to my reunions?
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know. I haven't really thought about that. That's a good question.
I just got back from my 45th, and 90% of the class voted for Biden, and they hate the 10% of the class that didn't. I mean, it was so extraordinarily left-wing, I thought to myself, I don't know if academia is going to survive this, but that's another question for another day. I want to know if we're going to survive those job numbers, David, or is inflation back now?
Well, no, inflation's not back. And one of the problems with the question is it does presuppose Phillips curve, and Phillips curve needs to be thrown in the ash heap of history. So the reason why the jobs numbers are not inflationary is because people producing new goods and services is anti-inflationary. It is not pro-inflationary. And this has been one of the great mistakes of left-wing economics for over 50 years. More people having jobs is a good thing. It is not a bad thing. And that applies to inflation as well. And even if one was petrified, even if one was hand-wringing, which apparently our central bankers are, about the awful idea of people having jobs, the fact of the matter is the jobs report on Friday was still sort of a mixed bag. There was a great amount of new jobs created, although the household survey showed 300,000 jobs lost. And so the data is still not quite synchronizing there. But it was also a really, really weak wage growth.
And so let's roll that video, if we can, of our job growth stuff, because I want the numbers. I think the animated numbers are there. David, everybody reacted as though that means the Fed will raise rates again. The job growth thing. Do you think that is the case?
No, I do not. And you're right. Everybody in the media did react that way. But you know who didn't? Was financial actors. The Fed funds futures market went higher in its pricing of no rate hike. We're up to about a 79% chance in the futures market of no rate hike next month. But interestingly, the futures went up for a rate hike the next month. So a lot more people seem to be betting on this idea of a one-month pause, which seems rather silly to me.
All right. Now, David, I want to switch subjects on you because you manage a lot of people's money. And let's get the AI video ready here, right? How much is under management at the Bahnsen Group?
$4.25 billion.
Okay. So if you screw up, if you have a bad day, you lose a lot of money.
Yeah, that is true.
But if you have a good instinct of where the market's going, you make a lot of money. The AI boom is the subject of a Washington Post story this morning that says bearish bets against S&P 500 are surging despite love for big tech. And there are many other stories on the AI revolution and how Microsoft and Amazon and Google and NVIDIA are the only four stocks you want to own right now. What do you think about this from an investor standpoint?
Well, I think it's exactly the perfect setup for people to get their faces ripped off as investors. And so essentially, this idea that everyone is going to pile into a company. Look, NVIDIA is going to make good money off of AI, but NVIDIA is trading at 200 times earnings. It is trading at 25 times gross sales, gross revenue. So some of these things can be true, that there's a big new thing happening, and they can be really bad investments.
Now, David, can you translate that for my Steelers fans? Because we got a lot of Steelers fans listening on WPIT, and they just have no idea what that meant, what you just said.
Okay, so let's put it in perspective for all football fans of that conference. It is it is far too expensive. It is good news, but is already priced in, and so you're going to overpay for something, even if it becomes true. And the problem too, Hugh, with this AI thing is you got to pick winners and losers, and nobody has any idea who's going to win or lose out of it. So the fact that someone's going to make money, that something is happening that is really new and fresh and creative and innovative, we get all that. But now you risk overpaying to invest into this little new surge of optimism, and you have to pick which companies, which is going to be very, very hard to do.
Now, I've told people for years, the only two stocks I own are Amazon and Palantir. Everything else is mutual funds because I'm not smart enough to do this. And I have Amazon because it's diversified within itself. And I like Palantir because Peter Thiel's brilliant. Other than that, I don't play this game because I can't beat you. Yeah. Can we communicate that? People like me cannot beat people like you. Will you explain that? And again, let's go to Steelers term. Why can people like me not invest, but people like you can invest?
Well, look, I think that for most people, the reason that they can't invest on their own is not necessarily just intellectual. It's behavioral. It becomes really emotional. people fall in love with a stock, they anchor themselves, or they don't allow themselves to admit when they've made a mistake, and so they become overly stubborn. One of the things I think I've done well, we've made a lot of mistakes, Hugh. I mean, I obviously don't do this perfectly for 25 years. However, I am not emotionally tethered to it. Like, if I make a mistake, I can accept it and move on real quick. And I think that that's one of the big benefits of people use outside management. But, you know, the whole thing is information is constantly coming in, and you have to be able to process what is real information.
There it is. That's why, David, I tell people I spend 8 hours a day getting ready to do 3 hours a day of news show. And that's my 11 hours of working. I don't do markets. You do markets. I see you on CNBC. I see you on Fox Business, and you kill it because it's what you do, right? And so if people don't do this, they're not going to be able to keep up with people who do do this.
Well, I think that's right. And I also think, too, that these days, what it is people are doing. I mean, I'm obsessed with macroeconomics. I care about public policy. We're looking into the monetary policy side of things more than anything, which is really a huge driver in markets. And so that is the type of stuff that is difficult to do at a high level and then apply to particular investment decisions. But right now, anybody who's trying to make big long-term investment decisions without a view of the Fed, I think that they're going to get their faces ripped off.
Well, David, that brings me to, quote, modern monetary policy, close quote, which I always thought was a scam, and it turned out to be a scam. What has anyone surfaced that idea recently, or has that been put on the back shelf with all the other Keynesian economics?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Even the leading Keynesians like Paul Krugman really opposed MMT from the beginning, this idea of modern monetary theory that you could essentially print whatever you want, and then you could control inflation by raising taxes later. There's a form of it that's been going on in Japan in 30 years. And the best case scenario, and I mean best case, which some people would take, is you can do it and just get no economic growth again. And our society would never tolerate that. We will not put up with having no economic growth. The problem we're living through right now, Hugh, is everyone thinks that what our angst is wealth inequality. What they don't know is that the reason people are upset about wealth inequality is because there isn't enough economic growth. Nobody cares about inequality when they're all doing better.
Okay, David, last question for you. The housing market is a subject of a number of stories this morning, which I'm not getting into. But affordability is retreating as interest rates rise and as home prices do not come down. How significant a problem is this for America's future that we're not building houses?
It's a massive problem, and it's both economic and cultural. You have a huge problem of not only people not being able to buy homes, but then those who do don't ever leave their homes because they can't afford to do anything. They're wanting to work from home. They can't go out and participate in society because now all of a sudden their home payment is taking up 50% of their income instead of 30% of their income. And this affordability issue is something that people have wanted. They think it's a good thing for houses to be overly expensive, and it is completely discriminatory against asset holders versus non-asset holders. And ultimately, it is really adding to this cultural divide. You have to build new housing stock. You have to have a normalized cost of capital, borrowing rate. Otherwise, people are stuck in their homes forever.
This is why we have David on. Follow him on Twitter if you want to be smart. David Bahnsen, Bahnsen. If you got a lot of money and you need someone to manage it. This is the guy I'd go to right here. David, thank you. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt in Studio North. The Fiscal Responsibility Act got passed last week because of Kevin McCarthy's spine of steel and Patrick McHenry's dexterity in details. Chairman McHenry, who leads the House Financial Services Committee, is from North Carolina. He joins me now. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. How are you? And congratulations.
Well, thank you, Hugh. Honored to be with you, and relieved to get a good deal.
Yeah, what people haven't asked you, and what I'd like you to take a couple of minutes to explain, is how do negotiations on something as complex as that proceed? I mean, I just can't even imagine if we had a time-lapse photography of the meetings that you and your colleagues had.
Well, part of this is making sure they understand the terms by which we're negotiating. And the terms by which we're negotiating were the bill we passed out of the House. And there are a lot of things we wanted to include in the negotiations that weren't a part of that bill. But we thought it was better and we'd have a better structural conversation if we started with the legislation that we passed out of the House to raise the debt ceiling and take on the fiscal house and include growth opportunities with policy changes. So that was the basis. And frankly, had you gone through a time lapse photography of this or the notes from that meeting, the first 7 days, well, first 10 days, 7 days, we'd not progress at all. They were stubbornly unwilling to come to terms with spending less year over year, and they didn't want work requirements. They didn't want permitting reform. They didn't want to touch any of the environmental laws that we forced them to touch. So it took a long time for us to make a small amount of progress before we had some breakthroughs.
You are quoted as saying they fundamentally misunderestimated Speaker McCarthy, and I think they did. I think they also misunderestimated you and Congressman Garrett. Congressman Garrett, tell us a little bit, did the emotions run hot in that room?
Oh, yeah, at times. And we had to explain the context here. At one point, Garrett gave them the summation from the poor mistakes they made when they were in the majority. They could have raised the debt ceiling. The poor mistake they made in at the end of the year when they had that big omnibus package that no Republican voted for in the House. They could have raised the debt ceiling there. And then they could have actually taken Speaker McCarthy for his word in February when he said, just negotiate. But they listened to Schumer. And so he went through part and parcel of their bad mistakes on strategy and explained to them why we were at the current negotiating table. And at one point, I explained to them that if they looked around, they're in the Capitol. What they wanted, their strategy was that we would be hat in hand at the White House by the X date, and they'd get a clean debt ceiling increase. But we passed a plan, and they were negotiating in the Capitol in the Speaker's suite because House Republicans had passed a plan. And then, of course, they gave us a lecture that there was nothing in the bill that they liked, nothing in the bill for them. They were the ones that said that. And frankly, in reporting that out, that's the reason why Speaker McCarthy said, look, there's nothing in this for Democrats. It was because the negotiators from the White House said there's nothing in this for a Democrat.
Yeah.
I mean, so we at least agree on that.
Well, their friends in the media are trying to rewrite what happened, but it's a huge win for the Speaker and for you and for the House GOP. Let's go to the bad part, because Ken Calvert's going to be on tomorrow, my friend of 30 years. And we're going to talk about the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee. It's a 3% growth. It's not real growth in defense spending, Mr. McHenry. Right. What do we do?
Well, unfortunately, we're dealing with a Democrat in the White House who has very poor defense priorities. You've recounted all the mistakes that Biden's made in his public life on national security issues and national defense issues. This was the best we could do with the arrangement that we had at this table. And we took the president's number on defense. I believe at some point over the next 2-3 years, we're going to have a defense supplemental to provide munitions to our allies. And I think that's important for us to remember that we have an obligation, an international obligation, and an obligation to the American people to keep our people safe and secure and to keep global trade working. It is to our advantage as the largest economy in the world and the largest and most powerful military in the world to maintain that advantage. And this bill, it at least increases defense spending by $28 billion.
So,
the other piece of this that
Chairman McHenry, how many of the no votes in the Republican caucus were from defense hawks?
Oh, and for House Republicans,
yeah.
probably two dozen, maybe
yeah.
more. And the Senate wanted to make a statement, even though with the bill passing, that the defense number was not high enough. And I agree with them. But this was the best we could do at the negotiating table.
Well, it's very good, but we can't leave it there. I think we need Pentagon reforms like you gave us NEPA reforms. And I want to give you the last 30 seconds. The NEPA stuff matters a lot. I practiced NEPA law for 30 years. It could boost our productivity. Did they push back on that too?
Oh, absolutely. We fought them tooth and nail, and without McCarthy and Garrett Graves, that would not have happened. The first change in environmental law since Reagan.
It's a big, big deal. Mr. Chairman, great to have you. Patrick McHenry from North Carolina led the team of negotiators that Speaker McCarthy lined up, along with Mr. Graves from Louisiana. I'm very appreciative of that, Patrick McHenry. America, come around for the grand old pod. I'll be doing that next. And tune in to America's Newsroom at 10. I'm going to be joining Dana and Bill Hemmer over at Fox News to talk about my new Washington Post column. Follow me over at HughHewitt.com. Get my newsletter from HughHewitt.com. We'll come back tomorrow. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you, Dwayne, on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.